tomorrow morning. He himself wrote about the Jews being in the center of every war conflict. He wrote about the state specifically, about the Roman and Greek Roman empires trying to destroy us. You know, there they were. Here we are, these little people. And they want us out. And not that we're trying to physically destroy them. And yet, as my friend said, each one has disappeared. Each one, I mean, we're still fighting the Roman Empire, but they don't know that, but we remain, even my friend said, we remain solid, unchanged, strong. We remain there in the center. Today, this concept world conversation is growing. We're seeing this take off. And as this confrontation grows, you see that the confrontation is as this grows, this confrontation in the world is growing. And it's interesting, I just want to make a slight point, that, again, the fire revolving around the Jews, a lot of this confrontation revolves around Haggabai. Haggabai is the center of the Shekhinah, that's the center of the revelation of Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, of course, the world has to be, the negative parts of the world have to be against anything related to Haggabai, because that's the ultimate revelation of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Which we said is what Amalek holds. The whole realm of the world fight against the revelation of Kodesh Baruch Hu. And interesting how, you know, what set off the latest 2.5 or 3-year conflict that we're 2.5-year conflict right now? Sharon, he said it's put on Haggabai. Now, luckily, we're not going to describe that now. But the idea is it revolved, started with Haggabai. It let loose the Palestinians in a new way that they've never been let loose before. And it all comes down to this mountain. And it says that in the end, this will be the focal point of the world. It is the focal point now, and at the end, it will be, that's where everything will focus on, Haggabai. And if you think about the first encounter with Haggabai that's brought down in Chumash, that's from the Kalkaria, that's Hagar. Abraham is sent to go sacrifice Israel. He doesn't know where. He's sent, and somehow he will find this place. From afar. He sees this place from afar. It says Hamakom. Hamakom is also Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now Abraham is going wherever he's going, you know, searching, and he sees Hamakom, this place. He recognizes, it says that he just actually sees some kind of unknown, some kind of smoke coming out, which is actually, you know, like the place when stuff has to be stopped. So he is there with, it says, not with the Na'arim, other lads. And it's brought down that Hazazel, one of them is Yishma'el. Now, in the passage, it just says it tells other lads to wait with donkey. Hazazel says that Abram asked them, what do you see? And Yishma'el said, nothing. So Abraham knew that he could not see the spiritual place. He could get to a certain place, but not farther. He had resources to come to a certain place, but not beyond. In other words, he could not see Hamakom. He could not really see Kadosh Baruch Hu clearly. Definitely not worth it to go to Haggabai. Not worth it to go at the final point up. Yishma'el does relate to a certain level, but he can't really relate to Haggabai. To Haggabai. He can go part way, but not fully. He can get to distorted truth, but that's what it is. Distorted, warped, unclear. His clarity is warped. And this is, you can see this, in the Islamic perception of Alam Haba. What does the Quran say? The Quran says that, you know, if you die, what they call Akadish Hashem, or Hasio, what they call dying for the Quran, dying for Islam, that all your sexual desires be fulfilled. Their view of a whole life is physical. Physical pleasure. Not spiritual, not being close to Kadosh Baruch Hu, not living with goodness, with power, with beauty. The opposite. Their whole life is built on getting an Olam Haba of physicality. If I can't get it in this world, so I'll get it in the next. And what do? It's kind of like warped gratification. You know, warped delayed gratification. You know, they have this persona of sneer. But what's the real thing underneath? Right out in the Quran, if, you know, I'm going to have this physical Olam Haba. I don't know what women get, but anyway. And the interesting thing about the whole weapon is that these suicide bombers have two rewards. One, they get money on this, in this world for their family. That's what they're promised. And Saddam Hussein and Hezbollah all give money for it. And if not so much money, an afterlife will be in the second thing of the afterlife will be full of the physical desire. Well, really running out of time, but I want to go a little bit of the idea of this selfish physicality. It's pulling Hashem from the place of my own desire. Like we said towards the beginning, of the idea of what I want, what I think. I'm going to give sacrifice it, because that's what I want to do. But am I following Hashem's law? Am I doing, extra, but violating the minimum of what Hashem commands me? We can look at this in our own little lives, in our own lives. Someone asks us to do something for them, and I want to do something else for them. But is that what that person really needs to do? Do the whole course of Zikr Tehillim, what does the fellow really need? Or is it my need to give to them? And I'm going to give them what they need as a whole, and then what they might really need. Am I serving Hashem for Hashem's sake? For my family, Hashem, for my sake. These Arabs that went up into the plains, that used the plains as bombs, and they're sitting next to a human being and having coffee with them 5 minutes before they did this. What is their relationship to that human being? What is their relationship to that human being that they can then go and put this plane into a tower, or into the ground, or into a building, or whatever it is, and kill everyone, but they're sitting on the front without anyone else in any other building, including the neighbor. Good. I want to be good. I want to be a good person. And then there's levels and levels of building oneself, doing Hashem's will for Hashem, for what Hashem wants. For Hashem as my father, as my God, my creator. I want to do Hashem for Hashem's sake. Even beyond for me to be a good person. Even beyond for my own internal goodness. Even just because for Hashem. And that's why when we are commanded to kill off Amalek, I can make my own Hashem. I don't understand it. I'm not in love with kill off Amalek. But if this is what Hashem commanded, this is beyond this is beyond me. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can understand it intellectually, maybe physically, possibly. But this is Hashem. This is Hashem. And what Hashem wants. And each of us,
now, I just wanted to say that you see that the name of Ishmael and Israel, you see that there are only two names that have Hashem's name in it. It's like everything you said from the beginning. But Ishmael is, he says, well, whatever I want, that's what Hashem wants. We're the opposite. He said, whatever Hashem wants, that's what we're going to do. I heard it from Rabbi Yitzchak of Freyad.
Hashem even calls Ishmael Terah Adam, wild man. This is in their being, wild man. Now they can use their wildness to serve the Kodesh Baruch Hu, they can use their wildness to serve themselves. Today, the full wildness of Terah Adam is laser force. It's right out there. We're seeing it, we're subject to it. Now, if it's coming out, we have to remember that Kodesh Baruch Hu is allowing it to come out. Nothing happens in the world unless Hashem wants it to happen, allows it to happen at some level. It's an alarm clock for us. It's an alarm clock to wake us up we can compare ourselves and look at Yishmael, who are they, what are they? There are many levels we can look at them. And this one area of selfishness we can look at. Today, the full awareness of Per Adam is an alarm clock for us. So I won't go into detail with what I just want to mention, but I want to show that this was predetermined. And Chazal already predicted it. I want to give out a handout. And there's two pages. There's not really one side, I see. Who is Ben Hurst? And he brought down this medrash from the Tanaim period. He was in the Tanaim. Okay, and he brought down this medrash. And if you see where it says, okay, the first page, sorry.
Keep asking everybody.
From the 70 languages that he said, also means nations, okay, that Hashem created in the world. Moshem Shmola, Chamehen Elam Yisrael. He didn't put his name into any of them except for Yisrael. But he also says, Ho'il being was, Yisrael Kodeshbar, Shmosha Yisrael, Shmosha Yisrael. But he also put into the name of Yishmael, the name of Yisrael. Well, he also put into the name of Yishmael his name, as you said before, but it's one of the names two places. And then he says, Oi, me, Yishmael, be a man. Oi, who lives in his days, meaning the days of Yishmael, Shinama, Oi, me, Yishmael, Yishmael, Yishmael. Oi, for who lives, this is how it's understood, but Oi, for who lives in the days, but Torah is in his name. Okay? Miyachyan Mishmo Torah. Okay? In other words, he's saying here, terrible for those who live in the days when Yishma'el's name becomes big in the world. Okay? He's saying this right at, okay? Yilam is saying this at, and Rabbi Elazar is giving this, or telling us this. Yeah, I'm going to continue with that later, but why? Why is what the word is at? So here it goes on to say, Rabbi Yishmael, and he talks about Hamisha Asad Barim, Asidim B'nai Yisrael, Lasot Ha'arfak Rihayami. 15 things in the future that the B'nai Yishmael will do in the land at the end of days. Now, the Chazal brings down, they talk about this. 15 things that we're going to explain right now. Some of them they're not sure if Yishmael actually does or happens during the times of Yishmael. Some of the things could be good and some of the things could be bad. Some of the things could be all bad, things could be all good. So it's a little bit questionable, okay, a little bit not exactly clear. And some of the things we understand and know today, and some of the things we're not sure what they are. So not all of them are going to go here. So first it says, "Im didu et ha'aretz b'chavalim." They will measure the land with rope. Now this is basically measuring land. It could be good, it could be bad. But we can look at it as, for example, that the land, as the ground is, as it were, has been divided up. We have a partition plan. We have a separation between what is quote-unquote Israel, and what they call Shvachim. I mean, it's all Eretz Israel. They have divided in the world's awareness of the world of Eretz Israel right now, but it has different parts, two different parts.
That's what
they're
going to have
They're going to make the cemetery into garbage dumps and fields for sheep to use as morning pastures. That's exactly what happened after 67. When they came to Harazesim, they found Harazesim and the hotel was a garbage dump. The next three, we don't know what it means. Okay, so I'm going to skip on to the next other one. So here they have Sheker, and Sheker will increase. And the next term is Batigasa Emes, but Emes will be removed. Now, this is what we described in Shema in the Mishnah Sota, when we said that at the end of time, we were talking at the end of time, that everything will be distorted. Emes will be Fasti Sheker, Sheker will be Fasti Emes, lies and truth, everything is going to be all distorted. That's exactly what has happened at this time.
That's cool.
The year of Chokmi Israel. Chok, the love will be far from Israel. In other words, people will have no Ramada Bay Torah. They will be far away from Abayin Torah. You see that? All over the place. The Yudu Avanos Israel, and the Avanos extended Israel will increase, which is all over the place. The next three,
well, couldn't the one before be In those days, the Mashiach will start to
come out from our mind, or the next is our neck, and that's what we're describing from Daniel, that this is when the Mashiach was about to appear, and this will be the request coming out. So also why we saw Amar, Shalosh Muhammad Shal Mahuma, Abdi B'nai Shal, both as Bakriti Yamin. There were three words, Shal Mahuma, of chaos, that would go on in the world. And then it says, these B'nai Shal will bring out, will be the source of, or the starting point of these words of chaos. And this is based on this passage in Yishayahu. And we wondered because of the sword. Because of these terrible words, we will be wondered. We don't know if the words have occurred or not have occurred. We're not sure. But it goes on to say the last word, the Goromi. If you see farther down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the Chav, the Chav, the Baal, the Goromi. This is the biggest word. Romi does not mean that the Rome, it means above. It's growing above. Shehu Kaved Mishnehem, the hardest of all of the other two. Shemamai Mishmei Kovel Machama, because of the horrible heaviness of the war. Umisham Ben Davi Yismach. And from there, Ben Davi, Mashiach, will blossom forth. Giving a promise. You go to the last, the very, very last of the next page, at the end of the, where it says Shema Amar. Going back to the name of Yisrael, like we said in the beginning of this, it said that Yisrael, the name of Hashem, is greater than the name. And there are many different interpretations. And this tells us, this is telling us here, Shema Amar. The Karat Shema Yisrael, the Karat of name, Yisrael. Okay? That's from Bereshit. The Lama Mikra, Shmo Yishma'a, why is his name called Yishma'a? She'ati l'kodosh Baruch Hu Yishma'a b'kol matat ha'am. Because of the end, of the future, Kodosh Baruch Hu will listen to the voice of the cry of Ha'am. Ha'am is Chai Yisrael. Hashem will hear our cry. Because, Yima she'atidim b'nei Yishma'a l'asot ba'ar b'chrit ha'yamin. Because of what in the future the name Yishma'a will do in the earth at the end of days. What Yishma'a will do at the end of days will be so horrible that the Jewish people will scream out in a Kaddish Baruch and will hear our call. That's why Hashem's name is said in Yishma'a. Because Hashem is listening to us, listening to the Kaddish Baruch call out to a Kaddish Baruch screaming for us, for him to take care of us, to help us. And in the name of Rosh Shapiro, he says that this is an alarm clock. Hashem is sending Yishma'a. Yishma'a is doing what they're doing to push us, to wake us up. Like Haman. It's like Haman is firm. We don't know where we're being led. We don't know what's happening. But these threats are to help us to change, to cause us from Shabbat, to move our selfishness, to look internally. And the Gemara in the Sechet Sanhedrin, and the fifth, so the Gemara in the Sechet Sanhedrin, in the Machlokas that's discussed. So first, whether the name Israel will have to do tshuva to be redeemed or not. Big Machlokas, whether they need it or whether the Mashiach will just come because of the time. The answer that they determine is that yes, we'll have to do tshuva. And if not, it says, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I will appoint a king whose decrees are as rough as hammer. And this will force them to do tshuva. It's in the name of Bacha Sanhedrin. But if they don't do tshuva, bring Mashiach, I will appoint a king whose decrees are as rough as Haman, Ramashon is Haman, and this will force them to do tshuva. We don't really know if this is the time, but it doesn't matter, because we have to do things now. We are the counterpoint of Amalek, we're the counterpoint of Yishma'el, and we have to act in opposite of them to see what, to see Hashem clearly and to follow his law, not us.
Because to me, this is like the starting point of the Geula that I love. I was sitting the other day and I was thinking, you know, like, what a big cook we have. If we're the, you know, the end of the generations, and Bezrat Hashem will be seeing Mashiach because of this war with Saddam Hussein, and Bezrat Hashem, you know, we should see it soon, and it's on the Galut. And we have tambourines. I don't mind. I have 10 shekels to some organization puts them out. I want to continue with Amalek and bring it into a different level, a different place. So what we discussed last week was the cruelty, the hatred, the negativity, the ra of Amalek, and how throughout the history they have been their job to fight the Jewish people and fight the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And they do this through both physical fighting and through their hatred, through their cruelty, through their hatred of anybody and anything, basically, except themselves. And we saw through history, through the time of first Amalek, when Amalek first attacked Klal Yisrael on the way to Matan Torah, leaving Yisrael, and we saw it again with Shaul, and we saw it again with Germania, Germany, which the Rambam says is Amalek. And you know, down through history, we've seen constantly this Amalek. That's Amalek, as we said, on the global level, on the massive cosmic level, out there in the world. There is this nation of Amalek. And today we don't know exactly who they are. They are remnants, but we don't know specifically. So therefore we can't go out and kill them, but there is the, as the Von Grundy said, there is the internal level of Amalek. Amalek that's within each one of us. That's the Amalek from within. And we have somehow internalized negativity within it. We have ra, we have hatred, we have all negative traits within it. And this is the place that we have to work at this point in time. Now, I want to take this a step farther, if we can, to understand it in a deeper way. And I want to add something, that when our internal physical place of good, of toad, is weak, and when the wrath within us is stronger, then we as a people are weaker, and that's when Amalek, the external Amalek, has a chance to attack us. Mm-hmm. That's when they have a stronger hold in the world. It's always this balancing act. In the history of the world, it's always this kind of like a scale going up and down. So, where does this come from? Where did it start from? How did it begin? There's an incredible relationship between Quran and the beginning of this internal internalization of wrath. And it goes all the way back before Quran. The Gemara asks, Haman min ha-Torah ma-Nayim. Where is Haman's name found in the Torah? It asks this in the Gemara. It also asks, it will learn later, it asks also about Mordechai, and Esther, et cetera, others. It's related, and it's talking about Quran. So it tells us that somehow Haman's name is embedded, as most of us know, in Torah. And actually every single thing in the world, and every person in the world, is actually embedded somewhere in Torah. Each one of us have our name somewhere in Torah. But the Gemara is cautious enough to bring out where Haman is embedded. Where's the origin, the root of Haman in Torah? Because the root of everything is in Torah. The Bereshit is called Hamin Ha'et. Did you eat from the tree? Or did you from the tree? And what happened? This Hamin
It's the same spelling of Hamer, just different vowels. And the vowels, you know, are not actually printed in Torah. You can say Haman Ha'eth or Hamin Ha'eth. This is somehow the beginning of the root of evil, negativity. So somehow Haman is connected to this root. And what happened, Rav Tzedek HaKohen, I'm going to use Rav Tzedek HaKohen's interpretation of how this Ra came into the world. So basically, it's after Adam sinned, and he ate from the eighth Hava, Tovara, the tree of knowledge, good and bad. And at that point, man, Adam, can no longer see clearly. His perception of life has been warped by his sin, by the going against Hashem's command. In one commandment, not to eat from this tree. And this is the one commandment he broke. We're going to explain why actually there was a positive side of his doing what he did. But for right now, we're just going to explore the idea that this is what he did. And he became warped. Now, Hashem then asked, Ayesha, where are you? And he says, Hamina ate. Did you eat from the tree? Now, this is a pretty funny thing for Kodesh Baruch Hu to ask. Kodesh Baruch Hu knows where we are, and he knows what we do, what we eat, what we don't eat. Why should he ask Adam these questions, right? Perfectly clear to him. Hashem's question expresses the distance that has been created between God and man. It expresses the distance that Adam created as a result of his sin. And Hashem, who obviously knows where Adam is and what he did, Hashem is expressing what Adam has created. Hashem works with us in what, based on our behavior. Hashem always responds and relates to man only as man relates to him. However we relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem then relates to us in turn. The more we open ourselves up to Kadosh Baruch Hu, the more we open up to Kadosh Baruch Hu, the more he opens himself up to us. The more we close ourselves to Kadosh Baruch Hu, the more he closes himself up to us. Or to others, whatever. Each one of us individually and people in general. Right. Hashem relates to man only as man relates to him. If man is behaving as if Hashem does not see him, then Hashem is going to relate to man in that way. So Hashem talks to Adam now as if Adam doesn't see him. Where are you? Did you eat from the tree?
It's a remark, not a question.
It's, right. It's both. Mm-hmm. It's both. He's giving Adam.
It's
a perfect tachaka and an opportunity for Adam to actually change at this point also. Right. Because he can think. He can use his mind.
Where are you?
Hashem is giving him. Hashem doesn't just. That's a whole other class. Hashem doesn't just punish us. Like, you know, when we throw people in jail for doing a crime. Hashem is rehabilitating us all.
So why is the question Ayeka instead of what did you do?
It's both. Did you. Where are you?
Where are you?
Where are you?
Where are you at spiritually? Not where are you physically in the God.
But anything physically is also the manifestation of the
Right,
spirit.
So where are you at? Where are you holding? Where are you?
Up there. And also where is the distance between?
Yes. So the where is
where up? Are you in relationship to me?
Where are you in
relation to me? Where have you gone? And there's also the question of Min Ha'eth, did you eat the dream? We'll get to Min again later. But basically, Adam has entered into a place of illusion. He's in an illusion. He thinks he can hide from Hashem. He thinks he can distance himself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Adam has set up these new rules of life. That's not the rules that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up. Adam created new rules. And Hashem now conducts himself according to this new rule. Now this is how the fear can go. Okay, we can use our free will, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in man, to distance ourselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or to bring ourselves closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem plays along with whatever way we want to go. Now he's constantly trying us to get him closer to us. But he's going to go along with us. And the root of going along with us is going to constantly be helping us get closer to him. But he can't fight what we create. We have free will. Now what happens now is that doubt has entered the world. Concept of doubt. Is Hashem really know what I'm doing? Is Hashem really watching me? Does he know what I ate or didn't eat? You know, there's a great story of, Rabbi Goldfinger is his name from, he does sometimes discovery for Ishtar in America. And he once, I don't know if he still does, he just very big physics professor in Baltimore, John Hopkins. And he, if you ever get a chance to hear his physics growth, it's great. And he is very clear that he is about Shiva. And when he originally, when he started becoming friends, he had a conference in Japan. And in Japan, there was this big physics conference. And there was this huge seat set up for all the people coming to this conference. And they had all different kinds of food and everything. And he had just started becoming friends with Chikin Hoshin. There it was. He knew what those food tastes were. It wasn't like he had never known what such things were. And he was huge, and he was the only Jew there. The only Jew in the whole place. I was going, he said, "Who would know if I tasted that little thing? Or ate that one little plate?" "No one would know." "No, I didn't know. Kaddish Baruch would know what I eat, what I don't eat." He sat in and ate food out of this entire festival. It was like a whole day's feast he said. And he went on and on describing his feast, and he held himself, and he didn't touch a piece of that non-frozen food. And he said for him, it was a huge sign. It was the beginning of his tshuva, and the beginning of his choice, and that's what he did. And he said, now, when others ate from this, from the eighth of that, I've been brought doubt into the world. Of course, is Hashem really watching me? Does he know what I'm doing? Does he know where I am? It's doubt. And it says, when the Gaon actually says that Eitz HaDaat, Tov HaRa, the Gaon says this is actually the tree of confusion. We think of it as the tree of knowledge. It's the tree of confusion. Good and bad has become mixed up. And we go on higher and higher levels. What is good and what is bad? And we keep growing in our lives. And we have finer and finer madrigas of what's good and what's bad. As a child, clarity can be good and bad to us. As an adult looking at a child, it's obvious for a child's decision what's good and bad. But if you look at the Gedolim, the Gedolim Hadar, where they have to make decisions between good and bad, on their level, when we go to them to ask Charlotte, because their knowledge of good and bad is so much finer than our knowledge. We have two choices between us. We don't always know which to choose. We go to the Gedolim because his experience of good and bad is on such a higher, refined level. But basically, it's still mixed up in the world. The Gedolim is fighting on his level to know Ra and Tov. He's fighting on his level. We're not even, near that aspect.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying before Eitz HaDaat, it was clear what was good in the world.
It's clear.
Because just to go up to Hashem, that was, and then...
And they weren't close to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. There was a lot of separation between them and Hashem in understanding of Hashem at world level.
And when they ate from Eitz HaDaat, so they had this idea, it was really the Daat that they had, was that there is good, there is new, evil, and they could choose. And they don't know what to choose, and that was
not always knowing what to choose.
That's the best.
But actually, it was like a choice between good and good and good and good and good, and good, and good. To choose from the good and good. But now that he ate from eggs and bad, it's bad and good.
And it's internalized within us.
Right.
And we also think that fight us. For example, when we make a choice, let's say we have a physical desire. Sometimes that physical desire is so strong, we can convince ourselves of doing the right thing. So for this and stuff, at that moment, we're doing the right thing. And going after it, that we realize that was the wrong thing to do. But we can create this confusion in ourselves from our desires. And this, as we said before, when we talk about Hamin Ha'eh, the Hamin Zin is embedded in the question of the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and we say Amalek, right? Hamin represents, Hamin is a synonym of Amalek. Hamin is Amalek. Hamin comes from above, you know, Amalek. Amalek. So the matria of a malos is suffering, doubt, if you send the last class. Malos is doubt, not knowing, good or bad, not knowing if it's push or push, this does not exist. Is he watching me, is he not watching me?
Does it make a difference what I do?
Does it make a difference what I do? Am I, it goes back to chashivas in the world.
There is no
I'm not philosophic enough to say, and there's many, many mafarshim, a big machlokes that talks about how much free will was in Gan Eden and how much not. If there was no free will, Adam could not have sinned at all. He wouldn't have sinned, he would have been a robot. So there was an aspect of free will in Gan Eden. Right, but what he did, the difference was this, and I don't really understand this entirely to be able to give it over, but there was a difference between the internalization of Ra and being external. Adam, I don't want to go into this in too much detail because I'm really not prepared to speak about it.
Okay.
But Adam himself, and I'll just mention it here, the ones that I'll bring in later. But just the question now is very hard to understand, but I didn't thought he was going to serve the patriarchal on a higher level by eating from the eighth of God. Very complicated. But the eighth, but the eighth of God meant that Adam could serve Hashem from a greater place of free will. It brought free will to a deeper level by eating from eighth of God. And by having negativity, then we can fight more. And this would make us serve Hashem with even more of our aspects, more, greater, deeper, more. And he thought that would be a higher level of serving Hashem. This is actually the root of part of the problem. And we can trace it through Amalek, as we mentioned last week in Sha'ol, when Sha'ol wanted to save the animals of Amalek, when he was commanded to kill off all of Amalek, and he saved the animals. And Shmuel the Nazi said to him at that point, you weren't supposed to. Hashem gave you a commandment to kill off all of Amalek. And he said that we thought we'd save the animals, the people wanted to save the animals, then we bring them a sacrifice to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That would be a higher level. That's what Amalek brings to us, the idea of using our free will, but in the wrong way. That's not what Hashem asked us to do. You didn't ask us to bring the animals, that's what to kill them off. And we made up our own rules. That's what we do all the time, we make up our own rules. And this is what Adam did. He set up new rules of life. This spiritual force that Adam created, it's a force that distances Hashem from the world. It makes a gap or a barrier between Kadosh Baruch Hu and each individual and Kadosh Baruch Hu and the world. And this is the distance between man and his source, man and his father, the one who loves him. This is the distance that's created. And with this distance, like we said, man is kind of like, it's free. He has brought more free will, and he's more free. Free to do that. Free to separate himself from the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Free to do anything he wants to satisfy his whatever cravings, whatever philosophical and different types of philosophical things, communism, Buddhism, whatever
it was,
you know, and his own materialism, his own whatever, in pursuit of any personal desire, his unlimited pursuit of his will. Hashem, now you have free choice. Now you go for it. You can separate or you can connect. But the deepest use of free will, the absolute deepest use of free will that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is setting up the world for us, is to serve Hashem with that free will. That's the greatest use of free will. And the greatest ultimate reward in the world is to come close to Hashem with that free will. But we have a choice. We can do either. So those are the commitments. With the mitzvahs, with midos, with learning, with all the toes in the world.
And
And Amalek represents in the world the force of destruction, separation, evil, negativity, hatred, distance from Hashem, doubt of spirituality, doubt of Kadosh Baruch Hu's existence. So the exact opposite. And the Jewish people are supposed to be, and within us is the ability to be, the force of connection, opposite force of separation, the force of revealing Hashem's presence in the world. The force of goodness in the world, the force of Tov in the world. And basically, as we said when we were doing the Shema, it says Shema, and Hashem Yisrael, Hashem Echad. And the Ayin and the Dal, as we know, as we said, is big. And why is it big? Because we're eight. Ayin, Dal, eight. We are supposed to be the testimony, the witnesses of Hashem's existence in the world, of goodness in the world, of spirituality in the world, of truth in the world. And there's more than just this physical world and my own desires, my own physicality, my own rules. But there is one above. One of the entry aspects of this is that Amalek is ready to sacrifice himself to go to this end, to erase Hashem's manifestation of the world. Amalek will go to any extreme to erase Hashem's name in the world. Like we said, Germany and Hitler, we said last time, look what they did when Germany was losing the war and they needed to send to the front and supplies and weapons, etc. What did they do? They used to use the railroads to keep shipping Jews to the camps. That's what they were doing. They were shipping Jews because when they were losing the war, they will sacrifice themselves. At the time of Haman, they're going to give up all their money to to fight the Jewish people. They're going to be poverty stricken.
The thing was also like Roosevelt, like he could have bombed the lines and he didn't bomb it. You know, that also shows that he like was on the side of the rail. You know, people were thinking of Eric or whatever it is. So he could have stopped the train going to Auschwitz.
There's an aspect of every person, there's an aspect of free will choice in the Torah Torah. And they're going that way towards the Torah, going that way towards the Ramah, we're going to get into the other going. But you're right, there is that fact that they did not aid and address the good, on the side of good at that point. But we see it, we're going to go into a documentary, the idea that the Jews, that when Ahasuerus made the decree for Haman, for the Jewish people to fight back, here is the emperor making a decree and they fight back. And yet they were still Goyim that went and they were still went and to destroy Jews. They knew that the queen at that point was Jewish. They knew, you know, and yet they still went to fight the Jewish people, even at the risk of their own lives and their own future. When you think about this, and Amalek in the desert, when no one would go after us, it says, Vayavo, Amalek in the desert, they came from far away to get to us. Mm-hmm. They weren't just around us at that point. They traveled a big deal. Traveling in those days, let me get to why they came. Yeah. But traveling in those days was not an easy situation. You know, a lot of people died in traveling, you know. They're talking about camels in the desert. Why did they do this? Because their entire existence, their entire identity is to fight godliness in the world. So they're willing to sacrifice themselves, but God, the existence, the name of God, should not exist in the world. Because they have no other existence. As long as Hashem's name grows in the world, they get reduced. They get weak. So it's worth it for them to sacrifice themselves. It's their identity. It's their whole being. They're willing to die for it. Now, on the other hand, as Jews, really our whole existence is to reveal Hashem's presence. So if Hashem's presence is being diminished in the world, we should be ready to sacrifice ourselves. Because we have no other identity in the world but to bring goodness on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, which is synonymous, into the world. Can we sacrifice ourselves for that purpose? Are we willing to really be who our identity really is? Can we sacrifice ourselves? If we can't, ultimately, we're going to cease to exist because it is our identity. And this is both on an individual level and a cloud level. On a cloud level, Hashem says we will continue because the world will not continue without Jews. It just won't because then there's nothing for the world to be for. The world's existence is based on the Kaddish Baruch Hu's name coming into the world. But we represent the Kaddish Baruch Hu. If the Jewish people as a whole does not exist, then there's anything for the world. But as an individual, each one of us has a choice to bring Hashem's name into the world or not. Be part of this. Part of the Jewish people or not be part of the Jewish people. And the whole history of the world is this battle between the Jewish people and Amalek, between good and bad, between Tov and Ra. And just to mention again, this Amalek, this idea, I just want to finish for a moment, but Amalek, you know, it was a little bit of suicide for them to go. It was suicide for them to go after us. It could have been suicide for them to go after them. They saw all the put as far as like that in the desert, the plagues, the Baal Hashem that doesn't try. No slave had ever come out of me trying. He was the first ever come out. They only were sent through the answer. They knew about all these. But why did they bother coming after us? Because we were about to have my son told. This would be the incredible revelation of Kaddish Baruch Hu. That it was worth it for them, even at the risk of suicide, to come after us. This is who they are. This is their job in the world. It's worth it. They have nothing to lose at that point. Now, when we fought Amalek at that point, and I was going to make this point this year, but I have to pick and choose. So the details of this, I'm going to reserve and let us have another year. The best fight with Amalek, we were already on a little bit of a low level at that point. We had complained in the desert. Okay, so we were open to the concept of Amalek coming at us. And there were good details of that later here. But when we saw Amalek at the end, and after the attack, Moshe backed up on a higher level, and he put his hands up. Right? He put his hands. in hand, and this is all a brilliant from our Center for Colleagues. We're going to be in great detail. And actually, recently, Rabbi Moshe Shapiro talked about this, that when the hands are higher than the head, what was Moshe doing? Why does it matter if the hands are higher? What was this thing that the hands were higher than the head? And when Moshe got tired, the hands went down low, and we were weaker in the battle, losing the battle. When our hands were higher, we were winning the battle. So what's the hands and the head? And we said everything is a physical manifestation of a spiritual force. Okay, everything. So it says that this is actually Ma'asa Benishma, in which that is our ultimate, why we result here, become Christ-like, because we said Ma'asa Benishma. When you put, when Moshe is putting his hand above his head, he's saying, my hands, my actions, are going to be higher than my own seichel, my own thinking, how am I going to live my life? What am I going to do? My intellectual, ins and outs of what's right and what's wrong, beyond the ego, beyond I, beyond my head. That I am willing to give myself for Kadosh Baruch Hu before I understand, before I think about this and that, before the eyes are my leg. The Amalek is making their own decisions, their own laws, their own judgments, their own rules. As we said, Germany, Aryan race made their own rules. And just as Hitler said, yes, I'm happy to be a barbarian, I'm happy to fight consciousness. You know, there are, I'm going to make the rules. It's saying a commitment to a Kaddish Baruch Hu even before I understand, even before my intellect. Before everything I want to serve Hashem with my whole being, my hands, putting my hands out. So every time when we become weak, when we're not serving Hashem with our whole being, Amalek has a chance to come in, to have power externally in the world, physically, and internally within each of us, inside. So when Adam sins, he is making his own decision to violate this one commandment, to not eat from this tree. He hid Hashem's presence from himself and from the world. And the job of the Jewish people, of each individual Jew, is to bring Hashem back in the world. And this is not, it's that every single Jew that exists in the world has some kind of a tikkun, some kind of a job to bring Hashem back into the world. We can't separate and say, they're doing their job, they're not doing their job. You know, I just have to look at myself. It's not like that. We have each inside of us a responsibility, and each Jew in the world is to bring Hashem back into the world. An interesting thing, in the same place where it talks in the Gemara, where it talks about where Haman comes from in the source of power that we described at the beginning of this year. It also asks, what's the source of Esther in Torah? As we said, every person, every individual has a source in Torah. Every object in the world is a source in Torah. So where is Esther in Torah? So it says, Vayelech Hester Asir Panay Nihem. It's Vayelech, and actually in Divine, in Parshas Vayelech, it says, but I hide my face from them. Esther means who knows to hide. Like we said in the second tier, that her name is like anonymous. She's anonymous. Through this hiddenness in the world that Hashem created, we have to bring Hashem's presence back into the world. Our job, which was what Esther epitomized in the end, is actually meant to go into how Esther does this even deeper. Esther caused light to shine in the darkness. And that's what each one of us, each woman, each man, etc., causes Hashem's light, causes Hashem's light to shine in the darkness. And he brought the tatim, the symbol. This is what Miriam, they didn't know, because they didn't know what was going to happen to them in that desert. They didn't know if they were going to get into the north, and they were going to really get out of any crime completely. But they had the amunah to bring with them these drums and symbols. And we see that Esther was in complete darkness. As you know, in the last class, we described that she was alone in the house, no other Jews around her. The only contact she had with Mordecai, that he was out in the courtyard. She had to go through messengers constantly. She was living with no other Jews alone. And she was married to this Russia, Achashverosh. She was totally at his whim, at his command, and we know as in the first class, that he was a complete whimsical person. He could just either cut off a head at one point and raise someone else at another point. And yet she represented and revealed Hashem even in such a mess up. Small internally up to this point, here she is getting Ahasuerus, as he said, to bring good into the world. She convinced him not to make a huge extravagant party, but instead to make a small party, as we said in the last part, and to give out gifts and to make reduce the taxes. But even beyond that, she was keeping halacha within the palace. As we know, she kept a different, the Medrash brings down that she kept a different servant for every day of the week, so that when it came to Shabbat, that servant wouldn't know that she was doing anything different than the other 6 days of the week. And here she was, no one could see her, just like this Dr. Goldfinger in the middle of Japan. No one was going to see her, you know, whether or not she kept an absolute extra piece of halacha or not on Shabbat. I mean, here she was in the worst situation possible, married to the worst person possible. And yet, here she was, keeping the little tiny bits of halacha as best as she possibly could in a worst possible situation. On the other hand, what we're going to go through next week is how externally, which she did, both internally and externally, fight Amalek to save Pride of Rock. We'll go to that in detail in next class, Pride of Rock. But just as Esther did, individually, we each have the ability to reveal HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. First to ourselves, secondly to our fellow Jews, and thirdly to externally, to the world. And I just want to add a little comment about a woman that I met in Brooklyn, who, an older woman, very quiet, very reserved, and I knew that she'd been to the Holocaust. And I asked her once, how did you keep your immunity through the Holocaust? What? She was a little girl, she was 7 or 8 years old when it started, and she said they were taken to, she and her sister, 2 or 3 sisters, were taken to a camp. And on the way to the camp, they were in a cattle car for something like 24 hours. And they hadn't eaten or drank the entire way. And she was a little girl. And they got to the camp, and the first thing they gave them, or a stop or whatever, although I'm not sure the specifics, each one got a mug of coffee, very watered-down coffee. And she said the first thing they did was never vodka. And the first thing they did was half of their cup of coffee, the other half they drank. And she said she didn't think about it, but what they did. That was their amuna. But they didn't know where they were going, they didn't know what would happen. They did separated from the rest of the family to 3 or 4 sisters together. She was the youngest. She said, this is what my sister did, this is what I did, this is what a Jew does. And you think about that in that situation of the amuna to continue with halacha despite what is going on around you. Now, and that's the idea that there is this, as you said from the whole shiur, there's this Amalek that is external, but there's Amalek that is internal. Since the time of Adam, we have internalized, on a microcosmic scale, we have, in man's heart, is evil, is ra within. And our job is to separate from this ra and to develop this code and to bring Hashem's presence back in the world. So anything that happens in the world, externally out there in the world, and anything that happens to us in our own life is the battle between good and evil. That is what is going on in the world. And now globally good and evil, we can bring that down farther and farther and deeper and deeper and deeper. But the idea is that globally it's the war between good and evil. Out in the world and internally. And we see it coming on now out in the world. And I just want to kind of end the class with the idea of the current situation. How does Yishma'el and the world crisis fit into all this? And a lot of this is from Rav Moshe Shapiro right now. And but I was just going to shed a little bit of light on this. How does this fit into all of this and into our knowledge? So in Vanipa, in Parakas Balas, Patukha, Bilam is describing Amalek. Bilam. Okay, a lot of people. Bilam says, Reshis Goyim Amalek. The origin or the first of the Goyim is Amalek. They are the epitome epitome of our wrath. But the other grain, the other wrath, comes out in the world through Amalek. Let me just explain this concept of the son of Amalek's actions after he saved his son. But as we said, that no one was going to attack in Israel after he saved his son. No one. After witnessing all the miracles, et cetera, et cetera. But then it says, the mother says, Amalek jumped into boiling water, cooling it off for everyone else to jump in. This boiling water implies a willingness to die. If you jump into boiling water, obviously you're going to die. They were willing to sacrifice themselves. Then the water would be cooled down enough for everybody else to join in. They knew there was wrath out there in the world, and they knew that others could continue this wrath. But the others were not strong enough to start the wrath. But Amalek is, because Amalek's full identity in the world is to destroy the Jewish people, destroy the name of Kadosh Baruch Hu in the world. So they have to sacrifice themselves. They can't let the world go to good. And this becomes the history of the world. The world process emerges from Amalek. Amalek leads the way, gracious Goyim, to the origin, destroy the Jews, spread evil to eradicate Hashem. And then the Goyim, who still have free choice, the rest of the Goyim still have free choice. Right? Amalek's identity is without that free choice. But the rest of the Goyim have free choice, and they can choose to follow good or to follow evil, which, as you brought up, they still have free choice, the rest of the Goyim. But they don't have to be Jewish. They can convert. They don't have to be Jewish. But the will is not to succumb to evil. But they can choose whether or not to succumb to this evil. Amalek has no choice, which is why we are mechuyav to kill off Amalek. We're not mechuyav to kill off the Goyim. They have free choice to come to good or to come to evil. That's in their will. But Amalek has no free choice. They are made this way. And Hitler said it right out. He had no Busha. He knew what he was doing. That's who he was. That's what Haman was.
Amalek has no free choice. In other words, each person in Amalek has free choice, but as a nation, that's their destiny.
Definitely the nation of Amalek has no free choice but to.
That's who I think
they are.
We don't know. That's why we're not clear.
The grandchildren of Haman, they learned Torah in Bnei Brak, so that means that they have a teacher.
That's why I don't know the answer to that question, whether it's... Done tshuva, and I guess converted, and are learning from the neighbor.
Sometimes you see some of the Nazis, their children, you know.
Bnei Kara.
Some people
at the last moment did not go with Kara, and they were saved from being thrown into the pit. They were at the edge of the pit.
Moose had such an orca. And they both saw what happened to Noah, right? And Arthur came over to Noah. Because they both saw the magic. But if person sees Emmet, and they turn their back, they owe us on it. So out comes Goliath after two generations. Out comes over to Noah. That's the Nakuda. When a person sees, like Amalek saw what happened to Christ, so Mithril came and was misguided. And Amalek came and tried to destroy. So maybe even individuals, we don't know, but I'm saying that could be. When they see Emmet, then they have the choice. And if they deny Emmet at that point, then they become Lachem, Chalesh and Megadeth.
So, basically, we've seen the history of the world. The history of the world, this global general history of the world, we've seen through the history, and it's been prophesied that there will be many nations after take the name of and wipe out Hashem's name. They will be there. They will exist. And like I said, each person has a different bechira, a different free will. Yisrael chose a different way to go. yet we as a Jewish people have to encounter and face each one. That is our order in the world. That's what we're meant to do. And each nation, each different nation, and sometimes they're called language in the language, that they, each one has a different aspect of Ra. Ra is divided into many parts. Ra can be stealing, Ra can be killing, Ra can be hatred. Ra has many, many manifestations. And each one has a little bit different negativity. Distortion of Kodesh Baruch Hu, distortion of goodliness. And that must be eliminated by us. Now, we know that there are four kingdoms, the four Baruchs. The four kingdoms, Babel, Pras and Madai, which is the time of Purim, Yavin, which is Greece, and Edom, which is Rome. Now, Edom is not Rome like Italy, Rome. It's a, you know, it's a whole civilization which we are still into till today. And each one is a different manifestation of evil. Deep down below each is Amalek. Amalek, as we said, is Reshith Goyim. Amalek is the origin. And each one is a different aspect, different manifestation of Amalek. A different aspect that's out of the world. Now, an interesting aside is that it also says Reshith, as we said in the last class, Reshith is also Chalitzah. We are Reshith. Which I don't think has one actually. Usually the people talk about Reshith when we have Reshith of the fruit, the first fruit. They were related to the first fruits that were the first. Anyway, going on is the end of days. In the end of days, it says, after all of these different kingdoms, the very end of days, we'll be forced to face Amalek again and fully eradicate Amalek. But we can only do this with the process of facing each aspect one at a time and dealing with each until we finally get to the center of Amalek. But we have to go through, it's like an onion, layer by layer by layer, peeling off. It's also like psychological work or needles work. You can't just go for the best and take go for the best right in front. You have to deal with the needles. It can take years to peel off, years to work at and work at and work at. And but that's okay, because that's part of the process. That's the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us 70 to 120 years, and that's why we have this history of the world to deal with and overcome it. It's a process. It's a process. But now, we're kind of towards the end of time. We have to look a little faster. But on the global scale, just to tell you what, this Amalek will come at the end. It says in the end of Parshas Bishara, in Parashat Zion, at the end of Parashat Zion, the last speaking describes Hashem saying to Moshe, he tells him, write this as a remembrance, Zephora, wipe out Amalek. It will be a war. It will be a war, a battle for Kodesh Baruch Hu against Amalek. From door to door, generation to generation, it's a process. Every generation will be fighting somehow in some level the Ra of the world, which is the source in Amalek. That doesn't mean that every generation we fight face-to-face Amalek, but every generation we fight some aspect of Amalek. And every generation, even if there's peace in that generation, has to fight internally, the internal war of Ra and Tov, internally in Sephira. And then it says in Parshas Zachar, which we're going to read in a few weeks, which is the end of Ki-Tei-Tei, Parashat Yud-Zayin, Pasuk Yud-Tet says, V'hayah v'hemiyach Hashem alakecha, it says, when you will rest from all of your enemies that surround the land that Hashem gave to you, a machala, for your inheritance, then Wipe out the memory of Amalek, mitachat hashemayim, completely, mitachat hashemayim, completely, from under the heavens, lo tishkach, don't forget. A couple points about this, Zephora. We're not just to wipe out Amalek, we have to wipe out the memory of Amalek. The memory of Amalek, the many nefashim that describe it, the things are Amalek, just one thing to say is that we have to write up, but even remembering Ra in the world, even having a relationship to Ra in the world. When we work on Amida, so sometimes there's a certain point of overcoming Amida where you don't succumb to it, but you have the power before it. And sometimes you work on Amida and you lose the power before it. You don't even remember what it's like to want that thing. So like, I have an example, like when you cover for sugar. You know, you can get to a certain point of eating healthy, you don't even want sugar. You don't even have a desire. You don't even remember what it tastes like. You don't even like it. That's wiping out the memory of it. But Mahatma, on a level of tov ra, on a level of working against a moral, it's even forgetting that it even exists. That it's getting rid of it so completely. And the memory of it, even. And then it says, lo tishkach. It repeats, don't forget. Don't forget. Because we're going to go through so many generations. We're going to go through so much in our own life, in our own 2020, and in the world, in the doors, the doors, the doors, that we can forget what we're really here for. What we're really here for is to wipe out the Mara. So today, where are we at? We're towards the end. But it seems that there's something else that has come up right now to face us, and it's Yishma'el. I'm sorry, I'm taking longer than I can. Apologize. But Yishma'el can. Today, on a physical level, we're dealing with Yishma'el. Now, whenever I say on a physical level, we're dealing with it internally as well. But we're going to look externally to see what it means internally. Yishma'el is the Arab world. The Arab is really a newly reborn Korach in the world. They've had Korach in the past. Okay, but right now, the past is...